Hello, everyone. Welcome again to another edition of Jedi and Germs, brought to you by TornbySports.com. And now you can find us with the good folks of BlogTalkRadio.com. Check out BlogTalkRadio.com/Jedi and Germs. You can download any of our episodes. You check us out there. Look for us there and all of the great Torn by Sports podcasting network. Check us out at BlogTalkRadio.com. Also, we want to give a shout out to our good friends, FanEssentials.net. FanEssentials.net, sponsoring our show. You can you can gather your favorite NBA team's merchandise, get it delivered straight to your doorstep, wear your pajamas. You don't even have to get out and go out to the store. You just order it. Go to FanEssentials.net, subscribe to your favorite team, and every month you'll get a set of gear shipped right to your door. Prices range from $14.99 or $34.99. Use promo code Jedi and Germs at checkout. Get 30% off your first month. Again, check out FanEssentials.net, our wonderful sponsor. Alongside, I've got the Germs guy. I'm your host, Jedi Zog. John, how are you?
I'm good. Just waiting for my Fan Essentials kickback to come in. Haven't seen anything yet. I'm tapping my fingers.
Now, wait a minute. Awkward. No. Hey, no, we like those guys over there. But anyway, we've got a great show on tap tonight. We've got a guest, and I'm going to let you introduce that guest. He's a personal friend of the show and of all of us, but I'm going to let John do the introductions.
Yes, a few years ago, a couple of crazy kids got together and formed UtahSportsNet.com, which we were all proud of for the 6 months that it lived. And everyone else went off from their separate quarters after it died. One of them became a fishing legend, and that is Spencer Durant. How you doing, Spencer?
Legend's too strong a word. Other than that, I'm doing all right. Thanks, John.
Yes, the good old podcasting days from Utah Sportsnet, where Spencer was the host, the MC, the man every week on that show. I went back and listened to a couple of those. Wow.
I did two the other night, and I gotta say, thank the Lord for puberty. it's helped in however many years it's been since those aired, but I apologize to anybody who finds them on YouTube. So.
Well, and we got to give props, because it was those podcasts, those Google Hangout YouTube podcasts, that got John and me started on Jedi and Germs, really. Because John enjoyed doing those with you and with me. And when Utah Sportsnet blew up, John looked at me and said, "We got to keep this going." So, I mean, here we are.
But Spencer, yeah, you could
all
say
these wonderful years later.
So. You could say Spencer went with a different kind of cast.
Whoa,
that's a very subtle fishing joke.
Mind blown. Yeah, mind blown.
I got that one.
It because a cast.
Yeah, you don't have to explain it. He got it, Devin. It's okay.
When you're fishing,
you're bruising my ribs from elbowing them so hard.
Oh my goodness.
I wanted Spencer on to give his insight. Spencer spent a year covering the Utah Jazz, and in fact, this year he's going to be the Utah Jazz correspondent for the Ogden Standard. What is that paper called?
Standard Examiner, isn't it?
Standard Examiner. Yep. I'm sorry, I'm in Utah County. So this hopefully is going to be a very interesting year to be able to be covering them, because they now have the deepest team they've had in a long, long time. And it seems like the playoffs are pretty much guaranteed. That's what I would say. What are you foreseeing?
Well, I played with the updated roster on NBA 2K16 and won the first game against my buddy Russell in a long time. So I think they're championship bound. Let's be honest.
Somehow I had a feeling that gaming would get brought into this. Really, guys? Really?
No, of course. I think there's definitely the opportunity there to make the playoffs. If they don't, it's going to be because of injury to key players. But Gobert should be healthy. Favors should be healthy. Hayward was exceptionally healthy all year last year. They've got Exum back. And then they've got Joe Johnson. and George Hill and the other Frenchman that I love, Boris Diaw. I mean, like you said, John, the team's deep, and there's no reason for them to not at least be in the seventh spot. I don't know how the West is going to shake out this year. Golden State's going to be up top, even with Tim Duncan retiring. You got to put the Spurs up there because of how good Kawhi Leonard is and how good LaMarcus Aldridge is.
And Popovich.
Yeah, and Pop's still kicking around in San Antonio. And I just read an interesting piece today on The Ringer, Bill Simmons' new site, that was talking about Blake Griffin needing to elevate his game. And if Blake Griffin can kind of become Karl Malone 2.0, where he learns to facilitate the offense as well as being a big focal point in it in terms of scoring, then I think you're going to see the Clippers maybe finally make that jump. It might be too soon to call something like that. We'll see. But I mean, that the top, the West is pretty top heavy this year. So the Jazz are definitely going to be competing, I think, for the anywhere between the 4 to 7 seed.
I know Devin's going to appreciate.
I'd be surprised if it's above or below.
I know Devin will appreciate this, but you forgot to mention another team that's going to be right there in the mix of that middle pack, and that's Portland. Portland is going to be up there because I think they're improved and they're going to be better. And let's throw in another team. Memphis will be as well. But I want to go back for just a second. You mentioned early on, you said that the Jazz, barring injury, will make the playoffs. I'm going to take it a step further. I think that they're an eighth seed, even with injury to certain players. I think that was why they addressed the depth that they did in the offseason, was to ensure that they can make it through parts of the season without key players. Last year, if you had George Hill playing with the Jazz, if you had Boris Diaw playing with the Jazz, I dare say there was enough games there winning, you know, to be won, that the Jazz would have been in the playoffs. So I still think,
well, the Jazz's biggest problem last season was closing games. Everybody saw that. Everybody knew it. That was the problem.
That was one of them.
They could get out there. They could get out there. They played with the best of them. Both times the Warriors came to Salt Lake, correct me if I'm wrong, but both those games went down to the wire and were decided in the very final minutes.
Yes, they were.
The 73-9 Warriors. And so the Jazz showed their potential, but they just couldn't close down the stretch. Now that you've got people like Joe Johnson and George Hill, who was part of that Indiana Pacers team that took the Heat to 7 games back when LeBron was there. It was one of my favorite playoff series all time. You've got that veteran leadership that they definitely need,
right,
to close those games out. And I think that's a valid point to make. I still don't know, though, because I mean, if your veterans go down, or if somebody goes down, or multiple people go down at once, you're going to have a hard time keeping those wins up and still relying on the youth of the team to carry you through those rough patches, because aside from the veterans added this year, the team is still very young. And so I do think they're going to make the playoffs, barring injury. I think I'll disagree with you there, Alan. I think injuries could prevent them from getting into the playoffs. But hopefully we got that bug out of the Jazz's system last season, and they can stay healthy and make the West interesting this coming postseason.
And I'm going to disagree with you to some extent. I don't think we can keep playing this team is young card.
No, we can't.
Because we could, before you added these veterans, and I know what you're saying, that aside from the guys they added, these senior NBA players, they do have youth in terms of how old they are. They do not really have youth in terms of how much experience they have. You have to look at Favors, who's still young. He's been in the league. Is this his sixth year?
Sixth year, I believe.
Same with Gordon. You know, you can't play that card too much longer, I don't think. And
no, you can't. And that's a valid point to bring up. But you also have guys like Rodney Hood and Dante Exum, and Alec Burks. If he stays with the team, I don't know if he's going to make it through everything. I have a feeling he might get traded, or if he goes down with an injury again. But you are going to have those other young guys on the floor who are going to need to step up when you can't get that ball into Favors or you can't get it into Hayward for that shot with 3 seconds on the clock. And Hood showed us what it can do when he destroyed Kobe with the Lakers' last visit to Salt Lake City. That was great to watch. But you're still going to have some youth there on the court. But I get your point, Devin, and I agree with that to an extent as well. You can't play this team as young card too much longer. This is the last season I think you can get away with it because everybody, by the time the playoff push comes around, everybody on the team should be experienced enough to take this Jazz team into the playoffs. There's no excuse barring the entire starting lineup going down with injury for them to not make it.
Side note, this is Derek Favors' seventh season. He's beginning his seventh season.
And here's what I would say. Rodney Hood I really like because he plays more like a veteran, and I think that's what you get. I believe he did 4 years of college.
Yep.
So you kind of have a seasoned guy who's young in terms of NBA experience, but you do have youth if you factor in Lyles getting additional minutes with the departure of Trevor Booker, with Exum coming back, especially having missed last season. Yeah, there's definitely spots where there are going to be still a lot of learning, I think, taking place on the court. But hopefully those things, people stay healthy, those get ironed out. And Jazz look pretty dangerous come playoff time.
John, anything, any additional things to add in here, John, or to challenge Spencer on?
Well, if the Jazz had the exact same injuries to the exact same players this year, they'll still make the playoffs. They'll just be an eighth seed. When you consider what they had happen and they only missed by one game, because Exum missing the whole year was huge. And that would be big again this year if you know, something happened. But it meant that the Jazz started flat-footed and their point guard rotation was Hal Netto and Trey Burke.
And you didn't pick up Mac until February.
Yeah. I don't even remember who our third point guard was before Mac came over. And were we just rotating D-League guys?
I think yeah, it was me.
I don't even remember.
I think we were rotating D-League guys. Didn't I see...
I think we had Eric Green at one point, and
oh man, yeah, I can't remember.
It was a mess until Mac came in, and getting Booker and Burke out were some of Lindsay's best moves in the offseason, in my opinion. I love Trevor Booker. The guy's a hoot to talk to in the locker room. And Trey Burke, no comment on Trey Burke. But hopefully he has a good home in Washington. But
hey, we like Trey Burke on this show. I'm just going to say that right there. We've had our times where we've been hard on him with due reason, but all three of us have agreed we've enjoyed Trey Burke. So you can say no comment, but the rest of the three of us enjoy him. So
yeah, well, and that's fine. You're entitled to your opinion, even if wrong, Alan.
let's agree that Trey Burke is a true professional. With how he conducted himself during his time with the Jazz, you know, we can disagree with how he was used on the court.
Twitter incident, yes.
Well, yeah, so. yeah,
and, but everyone's had one of those.
It really
Spencer.
Is better for everybody involved that Trey's gone.
Yes, so really.
No, it is, and the nice thing about having Booker gone, you do lose his energy and his hustle, which are incredibly valuable. But when he was on the court, offensively, it was 4-on-5 for the Jazz. Because you had no team in the NBA giving Book respect when he would try and play the stretch four position. Lyles can do that. Lyles can play the stretch four. He can guard the five. He can even guard the three. The guy is stupid quick. And his basketball IQ, you can definitely see why John Calipari recruited him to Kentucky. Because the kid knows the game. And that, honestly, that's probably what I'm most excited for this season, is to watch Lyles be that sixth or seventh man off the bench to come in and stretch that floor out. Because when he's in, teams have to respect his perimeter ability, and they have to stretch that court, meaning the paint's open for George Hill to finish at the rim, for Dante Exum to finish at the rim, for Rodney Hood or Alec Burks, or anybody else on Derek Favors, Joel Ballenboy, if they choose to keep him.
Okay. I'm glad you brought up his name. Let's segue really quickly to our next topic. John, and I'm going to go to each one of you here. I'm going to start with you, John. I'm going to go to Spencer. I'm going to go to Devin. But Jazz have announced that they have signed guard Marcus Page and forward Joel Ballenboy to deals. Any surprises with either of these two, John?
Not really at this point, because it's like they're building their training camp preseason team. Page just seems like it is a D-League in advance move. And Ballenboy probably still has a chance to make the team, but the only way he can really make the team is if they figure do with Plyce, if they waive him or trade him or do something with that so they can get the roster down to 15. Or they move one of their, they still have four point guards. So if they trade Mac for something, I think that might get them down as well. Someone has to go for Ballenboy to join the team, and Page, I still say, has no chance to actually make the team. And this is more of a, let's get him in training camp and preseason, and then he can be on our D-League team.
And that's what I was going to ask you is your thoughts on who makes it, because I have to agree with you. Ballenboy's probably got the best of a chance of both of them, because Marcus Page is just the sixth. Is it sixth? Did I just count right? Fifth point guard that the team now has.
He would be fifth.
Yeah. So I like Marcus Page. Don't get me wrong. And for those who watched the Final Four, the championship game, Page was brilliant at times, including the last second shot. But still, you have to think that he's probably the odd man out after training camp. So, Spencer, your thoughts on both of them?
Well, I agree with you about Marcus Page being out, and I'll just remind you what happened the last time that Jazz drafted somebody who played very well in the national championship game.
we just talked about him a minute ago. I know.
Yeah. The problem with Marcus Page, the guy's a 4-year senior, North Carolina, you know, all that great stuff. A lot of respect for his ability to play at the college level. Fact of the matter is he's listed at 6'1". And you know, that's probably with shoes on. So unless you're just stupid quick, you can't be that small in the NBA anymore and be effective at the point guard position. You have to be really quick.
Howell Neto.
I was actually surprised that they signed Page over Tyrone Wallace, a guard out of Cal. He's a lot longer, a lot bigger, and definitely fits the length and speed model that you can kind of see the Jazz are trying to build on.
Right.
As far as Ballenboy, I think he makes the team. With the implies, you're going to have to figure out who you're going to keep there to back up Gobert. But I would be surprised if Ballenboy doesn't make it, just because I think he's shown enough promise just in summer league alone. His work ethic at Weber State, and at risk of sounding like Bronco Mendenhall, you do have to respect grit when you see it. And I definitely think he has a lot of it. And he reminds me, honestly, a lot of Paul Millsap, who was known for his rebounding.
Yep.
And Ballenboy can grab those boards and clean the glass.
Oh, by the way, a similar in the second round pick too, because that's exactly what Millsap was. And look at him. He's an all-star in the East Coast, in the Eastern Conference now. So
I'm not saying Ballenboy is going to turn into that. I don't see the same jump shot capabilities, but we didn't see that from Millsap either for a while. But I definitely think at this point you're looking at Plyce, Withy, and Ballenboy, and I think you take the chance on Ballenboy than either Plyce or Withy. Because I think Ballenboy is worth taking that chance on. We've seen what Plyce and Withy can do. We saw them for extended minutes last season, and the Jazz are at an interesting point now where they can afford to take risks to see what players do. And I think they should take the risk on Ballenboy, and I'd be surprised if they didn't. You don't draft a local kid at 60 and sign him to a training camp deal unless you're seriously considering an investment in him, even if it is a D-League investment. it's still something. It's still a move the Jazz should and probably will make.
Right. All right, Devin, your thoughts. I know how you feel about Ballenboy.
Well, let's start with Paige. Paige, I was a little surprised by, but to be honest, I didn't understand the nature of the deal when I saw the tweet. So if it's just a training camp thing, then yeah, it's a D-League move, and that's where he'll end up, unless he goes somewhere else, you know, unless another team picks him up. I'm not sure how that all works out. And John, you can tell me if I'm wrong there.
Well, he Spencer's right. He's 6'1.5" without shoes. And from what I saw in summer camp, I didn't see much jump out at me from the way he played. And I agree with Tyrone Wallace. His measurements are so much better. And that's what I really wanted to say. I didn't see that much difference between Pages and Wallace as far as which one I would take over the other based on the play I saw. But based on other factors, I would think Wallace would probably be more promising. See, and yet it ultimately doesn't matter because they could sign Wallace too, and I'd still think both Page and Wallace are going in the D-League.
I agree.
Definitely. And if someone were looking for a point guard for their NBA roster, I would expect they would call the Jazz about Mac or Neto before they went to Marcus Page. Yeah. As far as JB, I think he will make the team. I've said it, and I'm not going to shy away from it. The Jazz need to move on from Tibor Pleiss. You know, and they should be able to find some way to hopefully move him rather than just buying him out of that contract. But if I'm making the decisions, I am keeping Jeff Withey on the roster because he was very competent when it came to backing up Rudy during Gobert's injuries last season. And Ballenboy, like Spencer said, it's a lot of potential. There's a lot of common ground, I think, that people will see between him and Millsap. And it's a hometown kid. And it's kind of funny because you've had Utah fans, you've had BYU fans always wanting to get someone, you know, some alum on the Jazz roster, and Dub State got it done. So
yep, there you go.
He's gotta get that jersey.
Yeah. Okay. Let's segue. John, you're next up. You wanted to talk highlights of the schedule. I'm jumping through it, kind of looking at it. Why don't you carry us on this one? What things jump out to you and what gets your attention about the schedule?
There's a few things that jump out. One, the Jazz have an ABC game, and they haven't had an ABC game in forever. I don't even know if Darren Williams got an ABC game.
I believe that was a last-minute decision, too, after the schedule had been released.
Maybe, but it's exciting. It just shows that the league has confidence that they're going to be doing some things, special things this year. The main things that jump out at me as far as the actual games go, 8 of the first 11 are on the road. That's going to be a real challenge for this team, and that's where having veterans on the team comes in handy right away. If they can emerge from that kind of beginning with like a 5-6 or 6-5 record, they should be feeling pretty good, because from mid-November through the end of the year, they have a lot of home games.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
You know, I'm looking at a PDF where it's color-coded home and away, and that's what just pops right out at you. Is after that initial hard road beginning, there's a ton of home games for the rest of the year. And then it's pretty even in 2017. In fact, in April ends with 3 home, 3 on the road.
Well, by the way, we get a first this year. Jazz have a few back-to-backs, but we get our first home back-to-back in January. So we play a home game on Friday, January 13th against Detroit, and a home game the following night against Orlando. So first home back-to-back.
That's what happens when you don't play on Sunday.
Well, yep. I don't think anybody's going to argue that. I mean, a back-to-back at home should be easy enough. It should be a lot easier than traveling. They don't have to go anywhere. They go to bed their normal time, practice the next morning. If they need it, they're right there. They're not going anywhere. So you take travel away from that. I think that's a winnable back-to-back compared to some of the other back-to-backs they have through the season.
One thing I heard Locke pointing out is that the NBA this year is trying to be a lot more accommodating with everyone's travel and not have one away game between home games, because it just feels like they might as well be road games with all the travel back and forth. I see a few of those on the schedule, but it seems like not as many. It looks like that when they do road games, they're trying to put a few of them together at a time. And you can kind of see that in the way they've laid it out.
Well, and on that note, I'm looking in March. There's a brutal stretch out there where they go at Houston and then a couple nights later at Oklahoma City. And then they come back home against the Clippers. And then they turn around and fly back to Detroit and then go back to back Detroit and Cleveland. That's an interesting stretch, and goes back to your point you just made too. That one might be one of those travel instances. Might hurt just a little bit. But the things that you mentioned early on, I've noticed the same things. I mean, it's that first stretch. I mean, they get their East Coast trip out of the way the first week of the NBA season, or second week. And then, like you said, December, they have a chance to make up for it with a lot of home games. So there's some favorable opportunities for the Jazz. There are some brutal stretches, but there are some definite favorable opportunities. Spencer, you get a chance to look at them?
Yeah, I've glanced through it, and I don't like to sit and analyze schedules too much. Just the schedule's a schedule, and people talk about the lack of competitive balance in the NBA schedule. The only thing that I think is worth noting this year, what John pointed out, is the fact that the NBA is placing an impetus on travel. And I think that'll be good, because you're going to see a better on-court product when players aren't exhausted. But as far as the schedule, I did notice that we opened the season at home for the first time in a long time, it feels like. Correct me if I'm wrong on that one.
We actually open in Portland.
Yeah. We open in Portland on the 25th, and then we're back home that Friday.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time we had a home season opener. So, seems like the Jazz are always away.
We opened against an Eastern team last year.
Well, and I think the last home game we had on an opener was a Halloween night game against Dallas Mavericks a few years back. I was at that game, but I think that's the last time I remember us having a home opener, like to start the season.
One thing I do like seeing is that the Jazz's last game of the season is going to be at home. It'll be against the Spurs, so that'll probably be a fight for playoff position in that game.
Unless the Spurs are resting everybody.
Could be. Who knows?
Oh. Well, they're not all old anymore, are they? I mean, you know, well, Manu, did Ginobili decide to come back?
I don't know. Yeah, I think
he's
so.
He's back. They offered him a lot of money, but Tim's gone.
Yeah.
Sorry, John. So. I ended your train of thought. You were going to continue there. I just had to throw that in there.
Oh, I remember now. One thing they did this year is the NBA season is starting a few days early so that the All-Star break can be longer, which I think is smart. I personally have no problem with the season being a week longer, because I just love the NBA. I love every minute that the Jazz are active somehow. And I think it's better for all the players, so that even those who participate in All-Star weekend will know that they will have at least 4 days of rest before the regular season picks back up. So I like that move they made.
I'm looking at the schedule now for those who haven't looked. I mean, yeah, we're used to the last game before All-Star break being a Wednesday night, which it is. And then starting up again Tuesday or Wednesday the following week, the next game the Jazz have following the All-Star break isn't until the following Friday. So that's a nice stretch of break.
And then they go right on a 3-game road trip.
Yeah, exactly. Devin, thoughts?
They close the season before the All-Star break with 3 home games. So
yeah, that's
everything.
That's true. Oh, well, and actually I'm looking at the February schedule. I mean, it's almost every other week, home, away, home, away. Like the first week of February, a couple of home games, then they go on the road to the next week, and then they come back home. So it's like, it's a nice little flow right there for them. But Devin, did you look at the schedule a little bit?
Nope.
Just what I was showing you while we were talking. Lots of blue and lots of gold, and that's all you've seen, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when it comes down to it, you know, they're going to play 82 games. And that's a lot of games.
Do you know what the key, Devin, to winning the championship is?
Winning more of those games than the rest of the people, I think.
Exactly.
Yep.
You nailed it on the head.
I think it comes down to something with putting the ball in the basket, but I'm not sure.
Deep thoughts by Devin Masters.
You got to do it more times than the other team.
Yes.
Not necessarily.
Just don't go all Derrick Rose on me and tell me that you think that you have
I think they have the opportunity to win all 82 games. That's that's really rare among teams. And we've got a super team, guys.
All right. That's enough schedule. Let's jump last Jazz topic. Our good friend Tyler on Twitter asked us to talk a few weeks back. It's been almost a month, actually. Wanted us to go over our all-time Jazz team, our best at each position, kind of go through some thoughts. So, Tyler, we're going to do that. We're going to talk about it. We're going to test the memory and knowledge of myself and John, and then we're going to test Spencer and you know, the young guys, Spencer and Devin here, to come up with some names here. So, John, let's start with you. Your all-time Jazz team.
For each position, I have Stockton as point. I have Hornacek at the 2. I have Dantley at the 3. I have Malone at the 4. And I have Eaton at the 5.
Wow. He just went classic on y'all. There are no new players on that list. Nothing within the last 20 years.
Well, it's all time.
That's a good answer, John, but I don't think that's correct.
Wow. All right. Well, I mean, we'll go to Spencer in a minute. Then, Devin, you're challenging. Let's hear the challenger.
I'm going to go with Stockton at the point. I'm going to go with Pistol Pete at the shooting guard. I'm going to go AD at the 3, Karl Malone at the 4, and I am going to go with Rudy Gobert as your center.
You got a out of John. That's all you got.
He has been humbled. Spencer, I know it's tough to follow that, but.
Go ahead, John.
Everyone gives theirs, and then we can talk.
Okay. Spencer?
For point guard, it's obvious you got to pick Brevin Knight. So
wow, wait a minute. Come on, seriousness here.
No, everybody knows it's Stock. The 2 guard, Pistol Pete. The 3, I got to go with Adrian Dantley. The 4, got to go to Karl Malone. But the 5 goes to the one and only Mehmet Okur.
All right. All right.
I was thinking about him.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to take anybody's thunder here. I'm going to go with y'all on the point guard position because I don't know that there's anybody that compares there. At the 2 guard spot, I'm a little bit torn because they've had some good guys play at the 2 over the years. I mean, Pistol Pete was a point guard. Although he was a combo guard, I'm sure he could play the 2. But I was torn. I mean, Jeff Hornacek, I grew up watching him as a Jazz fan, enjoyed watching him as a Jazz fan. So I'd have to think he's on my list, and he is. But I mean, I don't know what it's going to take to get Gordon Hayward on that list, because Gordon Hayward's, I mean, he plays the 3, he plays the 2, he's interchangeable, and Gordon has done very well, has been one of our best wing players since Jeff Hornacek. So I'm going to go with Jeff, but I'm going to say in a close battle because Hayward's right there for me. Adrian Dantley was a no-brainer for me. Karl Malone, no-brainer for me. And center, you guys have mentioned some good guys. I still have to go to Mark Eaton.
I was thinking you would go with Greg Brostertag.
No. I'm going to go with Mr. Eaton, because I, yeah, there's speaks for himself. All right. We've all thrown out some interesting names here.
See, I discounted Pete Maravich because I was going off of Utah Jazz, and he only played 17 games for the Utah Jazz, and I just didn't consider him.
Valid point. And you've already mentioned you thought about Mehmet Okur, so that's, and I'm not going to disagree with that option either because Mehmet was great.
See, I also looked at what would my dream team be. So I took guys from certain years. Dream team would be if I could have the 1990 Stockton and Malone, the 1995 Hornacek, the 2004 Kirilenko, and then the 2009 Mehmet Okur. That would be an awesome team.
Right? See, and that's another player I left off the list but could make any one of those wing positions was Andre Kirilenko. Because and Andre even played time at the four because he was so interchangeable amongst three positions for the Jazz. He was very, you know, they could use him in a plethora of different ways. But I still had to go back to Adrian. And then of course, it was either Jeff or it was Gordon. Gordon's going to get that talk at more the more we go, especially if he stays a Jazz man. Don't you have to think that?
The problem with AK is he, most of his years, he didn't seem to be living up to his potential.
Right.
And so when I look at that single year, that 2004 year where he was an all-star, where he was just doing everything great.
The 5x5.
I take that year out as just his best year.
Right.
And then I look at the other guys with their best years, and that's how I would do my team. And then when I look overall at each position, like there were certain years where you would say Griffith was the best too, but just overall contribution to the team, I still went with Hornacek.
Well, and what about Hayward? I mean, you look at time spent with the team. I mean, Hornacek spent how many years with the Jazz? I think Hayward is right on the cusp of tenure with the Jazz longer than Hornacek was.
He is, but he's a three, and he hasn't quite passed Dantley yet. I think he will in a couple of years, but not quite yet.
Okay. And yeah, and if you put him at the three, then yeah, I would definitely take Dantley over him. I was just thinking of Hayward being able to play both the two and the three. So
he's really a three.
And I'm going to address Devin's choice at center, Gobert. I think he can be there. I don't think we've seen him enough on the floor yet to put him at the level of Mark Eaton on a consistent basis.
He will get there.
I'm not discounting that. I like Gobert a lot.
I'm not saying he might get there. He will get there.
Right.
You will see that is the correct answer.
Any additional thoughts, Spencer?
No, you guys covered it.
Okay.
I know Spencer needs to go, so I wanted to give him a chance to talk about the projects he's working on.
Yes.
Including his, you had a book that just came out too, I saw.
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate it. I'm working on this contraption with wings and a propeller that one day might enable man to take to the sky, such as birds. But we'll see where that goes.
Now, wait a minute. Spencer, get on their book here. Come on, let's talk about your book. Because for those listening, if you're not familiar, if you haven't been keeping up on Twitter, Spencer kicked out a book pretty fast. Kicked it out, wrote it. If you haven't bought it yet, you need to go to Amazon and check it out. Spencer, what's the title of the book?
Learning to Fly. And no, it does not have anything to do with fly fishing.
What's the genre?
So it is young adult fiction like John Green. I want to pull those heartstrings of those young teens and make them scream in tears. And, I almost had a rhyme going there. And this
show got just a little awkward, too. I mean, it's not even awkward. It's awkward Tuesday.
I apologize for that. No, it's young adult fiction in the vein of John Green. My publisher said, and this is a direct quote, that she liked it more than Fault in Our Stars, and then I told her she was high. because it's not that good. But Alan apparently thinks it is. So if you want to go buy it, you can go to Amazon. It's for sale there as well as on Barnes & Noble. If you're one of those people that has a Nook, I don't believe I've ever seen one in the wild, only at a Barnes & Noble store. However, if you have one, you can get it there.
I've seen them. They're nice.
No,
well, you should see my book on one, and it would look nicer, I bet.
And folks, if you need to, go check him out on his Twitter feed and his Facebook. He's got a Facebook page. It's a book that you need to get. Support him. Go out and get it. And give it a read, and then tell him what you think, because he's put in a lot of blood, sweat, and tears over paper. And John and I know how this goes because we both we both do a lot of writing, and we know how much it is to bleed out onto the pages of a book when you're writing. Am I right, John?
Mm-hmm.
So Spencer's putting a lot of hard-earned time on this. So take some time to go buy the book and read it. Yes, Devin.
Oh, you're too kind, Alan. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
I just want our listeners to know it may be safer to do the e-reader so you don't get the blood on you.
Oh my gosh.
What are you insinuating, Devin?
He said there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. I'm just thinking that's probably going to mess up the pages a little bit. Buy the book, just look at the e-reader version.
Well, if you don't want a signed copy, I guess you can do that, unless you want me to sign your Nook.
He will sign Nooks, guys.
There you go. He'll sign the screen of the Nook, and then you just have to read around it.
Maybe the back. Come on.
All right, fine.
Alan,
no,
don't be ridiculous.
Hey, Spencer, where can everybody find you? And give love to your Facebook page, too, so they can find you there.
Yeah, Facebook, it's at Spencer Durant, author, and that's Durant with two R's because I'm one R better than Kevin Durant.
Wow.
He still has zero rings. So,
wow.
What?
Nothing. Continue.
He's not gonna win a ring. Golden State's not gonna do it. They're the 2004 Lakers. But anyway,
you heard it here first, folks. Yes, you did. Go ahead, Spencer.
And then on Twitter, it's at Spencer_Durant, and you can read all about my exploits there, as well as the Standard Examiner, KSL.com, Hatch Magazine, Orvis, On the Fly Magazine, and Trout Life.
He's a very, very busy man, and we appreciate him taking time to join us on the Jedi and Germ Show.
Anything for you, Alan, and John, and I guess Devin.
I was expecting the pause there. Oh, you two need to hug and make up. Come on.
Did you just say hug and make out? I don't bat for that team.
I didn't say make out, but anyway.
I think Spencer needs to go.
Look at the time.
would you look at the time? Well, how's the weather out there? All right. Hey, Spencer, thanks.
I love you too, Devin.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Spencer. We do appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate being on.
All right, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
And with that, folks, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Let's jump into our next topic of discussion. John, what is next on our list?
Well, the Olympics have wrapped up, so I was wondering if you guys had any final thoughts on that.
Usain Bolt is incredible. I watched his races, and I thought that in the 100-meter finals, he was challenged by the U.S. by Justin Gatlin, probably more than he's been challenged over the last 6 years, and I thought for a minute that Gatlin had a chance to win, but Bolt came through in the final 30-meter stretch. Was incredible. And you know, he didn't set a world record, but sure did make that race fun to watch. And beyond that, beach volleyball, I was disappointed because our beach volleyball ladies lost, ended up going to the bronze medal. The Brazil gals are really good, but I don't know. I enjoyed the Olympics. I don't know. Did you enjoy them, John?
I did. I filled up my DVR with the Olympics, watched some stuff here and there. To give people the final medal count, if they haven't looked, United States came out on top with 121. Second was China with 70. Third was Great Britain with 67. Fourth was Russia with 56. And tied for fifth was France and Germany, although Germany had more gold, so I guess you'd give them the edge.
But that's overall medals, right? I mean, because U.S. Yeah, also they also dominated the overall gold, didn't they?
Yeah, if I do gold, U.S. is 46, Great Britain 27, China 26, Russia 19, Germany 17, Japan 12, France 10, South Korea 9, and
just
so on.
Just crazy.
Yeah. So once again, it was a nice showing by our country. Have the U.S. ever come in not first place since ever since they boycotted 1980? I think every Summer Olympics since then, they've been number one.
I think the closest.
Now I'll have to look that up.
I think the closest was Beijing. China came awfully close in Beijing, if I remember correctly.
Mm, yeah, that sounds right.
So, and maybe while you're looking that up, you know, I don't know. That's what I think happened. But, Devin, did you get a chance to watch much Olympics?
No, I mean, I was going to, but I was going to watch my TV and some people burst in the door and they held a gun to my head and they were like, give us your TV. We want to watch the Olympics. And I was like,
I think Devin just went lochte on this podcast. Wow. Come on, Devin.
They stole my TV and I couldn't watch the games.
Hey, Devin, that's too soon. Too soon. It's too soon.
I should have locked my doors.
Wow.
Oh, there it is.
What, yeah, John?
Beijing, U.S. won more total medals, but China won more gold that year.
Yeah, that's what I thought I remembered. Devin, aside from the lochte jokes, how much did you watch after your gal, Hope Solo, failed to win a medal?
Okay. One, you leave her alone. Two, the answer is zero live. I saw... Stop it. I saw the final penalty kick of the gold medal match between Brazil and
Germany. Dude, that was good.
That I just saw the goal. I saw that last PK, which I think was a very, very special moment for that country. I mean, a year after losing the World Cup to that team, I mean, being humiliated.
Right.
To come back and win it.
Well, you missed a part of the shootout. I mean, the shootout, what do they get? They get four tries at a shootout, right?
I believe it's five.
Or is it five? But they went back and forth, mano a mano. I mean, but the goalkeeper of both teams preventing it every time.
I saw the circles.
Yeah, and then they get to that final one, and Germany had their shot, and what a save by the Brazilian goalie. But then Brazil got their shot, and that young guy stepped in, and man, it was such a joy to watch them celebrate on the field. And I'm sure you got a chance to see their celebration, but some of those guys were just flooding, you know, the field with tears, just, you know, lost in themselves in the moment for a few minutes, actually.
And I don't know with our listeners if they truly understand just how important soccer is
to Brazil.
To Brazil.
Oh my gosh.
And to some of these other countries. I mean, a lot of people here, you know, we see the tweets about soccer matches. But for those people, that's their event.
That's their life. That's sport. Soccer to them is what basketball is to us, or what baseball is to us.
It's a combination of basketball, baseball, and football all mixed into one.
Yeah.
It's something that I don't think we can truly comprehend because we have so many sports that we're torn between. There really is one main sport.
Yeah.
So that was really cool to see that. I was happy for him.
John, your final thoughts on the USA men's basketball team? Did you watch enough of their? Did you watch the gold medal game?
I did, and you know they dominated the whole way, which was slightly surprising since the last time they played Serbia it was close, but maybe not because they figured out what they needed to change and then they just dominated the game. In fact, during the second half, I was just thinking to myself, Spain or Australia would have given them more of a fight than what Serbia was doing. The Spain-Australia game was actually pretty interesting. I only saw the highlights of the game and the controversy at the end, and Bogut was very salty about how that ended up. But nothing compares to the 1972 Olympics when they just kept making up last-second rules to get Russia the win. That was so bad. Even watching the highlights again now, you just feel that sense of injustice swell in you. that they took the gold from them. And the 72 team has never accepted their to this day.
Wow. Well, you know, my thoughts from that gold medal game too was, I mean, the U.S. men, I mean, the thing that I think stood out to me most in that game was the U.S.'s defense and their interest in defense. I think some people could argue that in the previous, in the semifinal in the previous games where they struggled, it was their defense that struggled to make, to get stops. And against Serbia, man, their defense was suffocating. And then you throw on top of that, Durant was incredible in the second quarter. Guy just didn't miss. And it was very much a fun game to watch. But I knew by halftime, I'm like, this is over. You know, they've beat Serbia. I have to agree with you. I felt like if the U.S. had faced Argentina, Spain, somebody like that in the gold medal game, it might have been a little bit more of a competitive game than it was with Serbia. And there's no disrespect to Serbia because, it, you know, previous to this, the previous match they'd had with each other went down to the wire where the U.S. had to win by three. But it just, when you get into gold medal games like that and into, you know, you got to win it, you're right there. The U.S. is going to do it. Unless you get stacked teams like that Argentina team, which, by the way, can we give love to Argentina? We've watched quite a long run for a very good team, international team, with Manu. I think Manu's retiring from the international game after this, if I remember hearing right.
Yeah, and Scola, I think, is done as well.
Yeah, they've had a very, very dominant run over the last decade and a half. So, you know, hurrah, you know, I give props to them. They've done really well.
Let's look at a couple things, though, with the U.S. winning. I believe there was a comment from Carmelo Anthony saying that if they won a gold medal, it would he would feel better about his career even if he never wins an NBA championship. DeAndre Jordan saying that the gold medal means more to him than an NBA championship. Do you agree with those statements?
I honestly don't know if I was one of the best players in the world. That's actually pretty close. I would incline to, like, if I had a choice, I think I would rather have an NBA championship than a gold medal. But winning a gold medal for your country just has to be one of the best feelings in the world. So
absolutely.
So I can't really quibble with it.
Well, and this isn't the first time we've had NBA players say this. We can go back over the last little while. I mean, LeBron even said it, how much it meant to him to win a gold medal. So, no, I'm with John here. As important as it is to get an NBA championship, winning for your country, especially in the sport where your country dominates, should be something that you're excited about.
Now, so, I'm going to bring something else up, and I have not looked into this. I do not know if it is true or false, but were there comments made by KD following the victory that maybe this had kind of turned things around for him in the eyes of the American public after his choice to go to Golden State? Did anyone else hear that?
I didn't catch those comments.
I didn't hear that, but that's... for this month, sure. But there were also the jokes that if the USA is behind Serbia in the first quarter, Kevin Durant's going to change his citizenship, join the Serbian team. There's jokes like that. I think right now everyone loves KD for being the number one guy to win us gold again. I think that will all kind of melt away once October rolls around and we see KD on the ridiculously stacked Warriors.
You know what? I don't care. I don't like him anymore. And to be honest, I kind of wish Serbia had won.
Why?
I don't care. You've got a team with Boogie, with Melo, with KD, with Draymond. And you want me to be like, yeah, this is a team I want to cheer for. Why don't we? Oh, we already got DeAndre Jordan as well. Can we get James Harden down here?
Devin, where's your country's pride?
My country's pride does not have to be part of that basketball team. I can love my country more than anyone and still hate that basketball team.
All right, then.
Not a fan.
I want to throw out a random question. Here's a random Olympics question I have not given you a heads up about. If you could eliminate one sport from the Olympics, what would it be?
Wow.
I'll tell you mine. Golf. Golf should not be an Olympic sport.
That was the first thought that came to mind. If I was to go off of my first and only thought, it would have been golf. There's a couple other sports I could do without in the Olympics, but yeah, golf is a good one.
Hang on, I have to check Google because I didn't watch the Olympics. I don't know what's in there.
What about boxing, though? Do you think boxing deserves to be in the Olympics?
Yeah, I like boxing in the Olympics.
Okay.
I mean, that feels like more of an old school Olympic sport, you know, boxing, wrestling, shot put, javelin. I love all those kind of sports. They've just expanded it so much that it just feels like there's too many sports. I mean, there's a ton. There's probably, I don't know, 50 different sports. In fact, I just opened the Wikipedia page. Oh, the horse ones, equestrian, all equestrian.
They must be done away with.
There should be no animals in the Olympics. If there's an animal involved, it is not an Olympic sport. I would get rid of all of those.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
My internet's not working, so I don't know. Get rid of the horses. And get rid of arm wrestling while you're at it. Is that in there?
Okay, well, here's this. I heard a lot of love from a lot of people, including our local sports radio stations, talking about having a massive tug of war to finish off the Olympics during the ceremonies. Would you be in favor of a tug of war in the Olympics?
Sure. If there was some kind of, you know, weight requirements, like the total weight of your team had to be within some area. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's that country that has one person representing. Yeah. That doesn't end well for that one person.
Okay. Yeah.
I saw some of the table tennis. Those guys get into it.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. Yes. You need to watch quite a bit of that sometime just to be entertained.
I have no problem with table tennis in the Olympics. That's something else. That's one thing I do like about the Olympics is it takes these sports that you're otherwise just not going to watch. I am not going to watch table tennis. Oh, it's the Olympics? Oh, I'll watch table tennis. You know? I'm not going to watch swimming on my downtime, but during the Olympics, yeah.
See, my biggest regret is that I didn't watch handball because I still don't know what handball looks like. To me, I think of playing with a racquetball out on the wall of the schoolyard.
It's the same general. You've never played it, really?
I did not
watch it. I watched part of a women's handball game, and it took me a minute to go, what are they playing? I don't even know what I'm watching. And then they told me it was handball. And so I had to sit and watch a little more to try to figure out what the rules were.
Is that not the same as the handball we used to play during recess at elementary school, John? No?
No. It's like this it's this weird hybrid of rugby and soccer and not with your feet. It's like soccer with only your hands. But you can catch and you can pass and you can bounce once, I think, and I don't know. It was very strange to watch. But yeah, when I think of handball, I think of just having a mitt on your hand and whacking a ball against a wall over and over.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not what this was.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I was in elementary school, I remember we'd go out it's the same ball you'd use to play dodgeball with, the rubber ball, and you'd go out, you know, this decent basketball-sized ball, and you'd go out actually, we did that, and then there were other times you'd use a racquetball-sized ball, but you go out there and sit there and hit the ball off the wall and try and keep it in play the whole time, you and your friends. I did that a lot during my...
Yeah, 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 I'm used to handball feeling like a half racquetball.
Yes.
But you play it with your hand type game.
Right.
And this was a completely other different thing.
Guys, I have the perfect end to the Olympics.
What's that?
A world dodgeball match. Just a free for all.
Okay, that's,
I would love it.
That yeah, absolutely.
And Gary Cole and Jason Bateman do color commentary.
Yes.
And Ryan Lochte plays in the middle where everybody can throw the ball at him. Oh, wait, sorry. Too soon again. Too soon.
He was already back in America, okay?
I know, that's so
nice. You know what's really funny about him, since you brought him up again, and I hate you for it? USA Today did their own investigation, and he did totally embellish it, but if you factor in that he was drunk and what the damage actually was, it wasn't that far off for him to think that these were guys. I mean, they're basically prison guards who showed up at the bathroom, and they did have badges, and the guy did pull out his gun, and I don't know. It wasn't as incredibly stupid as originally sounded, that he made it all completely up.
Well, in fact,
he did lie about parts and embellish other parts, but it wasn't a completely made out of nowhere type story.
And in fact, Yahoo Sports did a thing today. I retweeted it, or retweeted a friend that said it, but the report says real police exaggerated their version. So it wasn't just Lochte who exaggerated. Now we're finding out the real police have done the exact same thing. They've exaggerated their story.
Yeah, that's what USA Today said.
Look.
And the one guy just agreed to play the fine so he could get out of the country.
Look. There is a silver lining to this. He may have lost his sponsors, you know, like Speedo and other sponsors, I'm sure, coming. But the U.S. really found their next track star for the 2020 games, because that guy can run.
Devin is deep in the jokes tonight. Wow. Well done. All right.
Let's pop culture.
I have an excellent idea.
We're not to
let's
pop culture.
The subject.
Yes, let's change. We're not to pop culture yet. John had one more thought in the sports-related news. BYU made an announcement today. I think it was today that Taysom Hill will be their game one starter. Any surprises from anybody?
Not surprised.
No, I'm not. I'm not terribly surprised either. I saw this coming. I don't know if I agree with it, but I am not surprised. John, Do you agree with it?
Yeah, I mean, Hill's 26. He's a senior. Mangum's a sophomore. He'll probably get injured at some point in the year anyway.
Yeah.
I have no problem with it.
Exactly. Any thoughts from you, Devin?
Yeah, he should have gone with Bronco.
All right. Anyway. All right.
Oh,
that was a quick hit in the BYU news.
Whoa. I was serious.
You were serious? Oh, okay. Oh, you're talking about he should have followed Bronco. I was like, okay, yeah. No, you're right.
He could have gone and got a starting job over there. Tanner Mangum could have got his starting job here.
By the way,
they're still going to lose to Utah.
I've got one more college note to drop. Earlier today, it was announced that the Utes, Butler Bird, I believe, was cleared of all charges, if I remember hearing the story right. He will not be allowed to play right away, but it looks like he's been allowed back with the team. That's what I heard on the radio earlier today. I can't remember the exact quotes or the exact details around it. So for you Ute fans, you probably already know this by the time you're listening. Corey Butler Bird is being allowed back with the team. So not necessarily to play, but back. Anyway. Okay. Pop culture. What do you got, John?
I've seen a couple movies since last we talked. I saw Sausage Party, which was probably what you would expect. It was very vulgar, very raunchy, pretty funny for most of the movie. I don't know. It's right up there with like the South Park movie or Team America World Police, where it just gleefully has fun with its rating. It was actually surprisingly clever with the way it I would say it tackles like VeggieTales and then the Toy Story movies and just pretty much the entire Pixar canon that just anthropomorph, I don't know the word. You know, it makes toys people, it makes cars people, makes everything people. So they make food people. And in this world, food, every morning in the grocery store, they sing of the glorious day that the gods will buy them and take them to the great beyond, which is out the front door. And they think that that's just where paradise is. And then one day, a jar of honey mustard is returned to the store because the guy thought it was Dijon, and he just has tales of horror that, no, these gods are horrible. They're monsters because they take you home and they eat you and they kill you, and there's nothing in the great beyond but death. And so the food goes through this existential crisis as they try to cope with this newfound knowledge. And you know, I thought it was pretty funny for that. There's some stuff that just does not work. The main villain of the movie is a douche, and I just didn't find him funny or amusing or anything. And when he kept coming back, I was just like, ah, crap, he's going to be coming back for the whole movie. But overall, I liked it. But anyone who wants to see it, you have to know what you're getting into.
Yeah, I read your review on it. I don't intend on seeing it, but your review was enough for me.
Yeah. And then I also saw Hell or High Water, which is this independent movie that didn't really get a lot of publicity, even though it stars Jeff Bridges and Chris Pine and Ben Foster. And it was really good. It's probably my favorite movie of the year so far. It's about these two brothers, Chris Pine and Ben Foster, and they have a plan to rob a series of banks. And they're going to use the money from that to pay off bank loans on their mom's ranch, she's about to lose her ranch. And so they figured the only way that they're going to be able to get the money in time to stop her ranch from being foreclosed on is to rob these banks. And then Jeff Bridges is the U.S. Marshal who is put in charge of trying to solve the bank robbing crimes. And he has a partner who's a Native American, and he's played by Gil Birmingham, who was in the Twilight movies. And so the movie goes back and forth between the two brothers doing their plan and then the two marshals who are on their trail. But it all takes place in rural Texas, and the whole movie, it just permeates just how damaging poverty is and how bad the economy is for certain sections of the country. And you just feel it through the whole movie. And so when I look at movies about the financial crisis, like Wolf of Wall Street and The Big Short and 99 Homes, this feels like another movie in there where it's an entertaining crime movie, but the whole time there's just that extra weight of, you can understand why these brothers would ultimately decide to do something like this, because the way the system is set up, at one point, toward the end of the movie, Chris Pine has this monologue about how poverty is like a disease that you just pass on from generation to generation. And it really rang true. And like every scene means something. There's no wasted scene. I just thought it was great. And I hope everyone goes to see it so that it'll make more money and go to more screens.
All right, there you go. And I've seen you and a couple of our friends on Twitter talking about it the last couple of days. So you say Hell or High Water, right?
Yep.
All right. I don't have anything to contribute this week because I have not. I'm trying to think if I've been out to see a movie recently. Well, I did see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, finally. Saw it in the Dollar Theater.
I did not.
You never saw it?
Never did see it. I just heard it wasn't very good.
No, it wasn't. It was okay. But not. Here's my thought on it. On the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise of late, if they were to combine the special effects with and maybe my memory is just not serving me well, but the storyline of the '90s movies I thought was good. You combine the special effects with those, and you have decent movie. This is Michael Bay. So I think that should come as no surprise for people how it turned out. But it was all right. Even my son looked at me after a while and said, is this over yet? And it was only 2 hours long, but it just seemed so much longer than that. And like I said, we went inside a Dollar Theater, so I can't say that I spent a whole lot of money on it. So, you know, wait for it to come out on DVD, which is coming soon. Other than that, don't waste your time on it. Devin, you watched any shows recently?
I am through season 8 of How I Met Your Mother. So that's fun. I am to the final season, and I am excited to see how the story ends. I've seen the mother, which is nice.
Wow.
So I watched that. I watched a movie on Netflix called The Fundamentals of Caring, a Netflix original with Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was funny. I thought it kind of kept the viewer into the show throughout. You know, it's good. It's a little strong on the language, but if you can get past that, I think you would enjoy the show.
You like Paul Rudd in it?
I like Paul Rudd in just about anything that he's in.
Fair enough.
So, and I'm not sure. Did we talk about the conclusion of Stranger Things?
No, because I haven't concluded it yet.
Well, let's talk about the very ending of
that. No, I have not had time. I have not had time to finish it yet. I've watched it when I've had moments. Okay.
Plug your ears.
Fine.
You remember when they do the big shootout at the end and all the boys die? I was really surprised by that.
My ears weren't plugged for that, and just wow. Devin, did you finish it all the way?
Yeah. What did you think when Tom Hanks showed up?
Oh my gosh!
I wasn't surprised. I figured that we'd get homage from some A-lister star at the end, and he seemed like the right choice.
I wish you could see Alan's face.
How do I even respond to any of this? I mean, gosh.
They did announce that they're doing season 2, and they did also say that it will be a sequel, that it won't be, you know, an anthology type thing like American Horror Story or anything. It will be a sequel, and so these characters will be coming back.
Yes.
I'm still waiting for the soundtrack to hit, which has been promised. I'm just waiting for it to come.
Don't start on the soundtrack. Just finish watching the show first.
I will. Gosh.
That's your assignment. You have to finish the show by the next time we record.
Fair. I can do that. I do want to make one little asterisk next to something I said earlier, just to, as we close. I said Butler Byrd was cleared. He was not. He entered a guilty plea of abeyance, and charges will be dismissed next year, pending 12 months without an offense. So, and with mental health counseling. So my bad on that. I know you fans will come after me if I don't correct myself. Anyway, any additional thoughts? All right.
I'm thinking we're done.
Yep, let's wrap this up. Thanks for joining us yet again for another edition of Jedi and Germs. We thank you all so very much for listening, interacting with us, and being a part of our show every single week when we bring it to you. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher, Jedi and Germs. You can find us on Google Play, Jedi and Germs. Now on, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, blogtalkradio.com/Jedi and Germs, our new home. Always with TornbySports.com and on Facebook and Twitter, Jedi and Germs. Get at us. Share your thoughts with us. Leave a review on iTunes. We always appreciate it. Thank you all for joining us. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.